You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is Metal Mike, and in this episode, we talk to the super talented Tommy Paris. We talk in depth about his new solo album, Earth Ears, and we revisit his days in Britney Fox. It's a great conversation. Check it out.
Well, Tommy, welcome to the 80s Glam Metal Cast, man. How are you?
Good, Mike. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing great, man. So, hey, you got an album out right now, Earth Ears. I've been jamming on this all week, man. I've been loving it. Tell everybody about it.
Well, I've been working on this before the pandemic, so this has been a long project, probably the longest one I've ever done. So it's definitely longer than I planned on, but you know how that all went. But anyway, finally get some traction again, and it came out at the end of April, so it's just barely out. But I've been getting great reviews from people, and they're saying, you know, you still have some of the same stuff, but you've moved into a few different areas. So I've been getting really cool reactions from it, and people like different tunes from it. It doesn't come back with people liking all the same stuff. So it's kind of cool. It's reactions all over the place.
You know, you made a cool point because you definitely hear like the sound that you're known for in there, but there's a lot of other influences that are kind of creeping in.
Well, basically, it kind of started like this, Mike. I was writing with a drum kit and a piano and a guitar, and I wrote a lot with the piano and drums because I wanted this album to be on the piano a lot.
Yeah.
So that was one of the first things. Yeah, that was one of the first reasons that it moved into that area. I've been playing piano my whole life, so the piano was nothing new. But when I got into the music scene and making records and all that, I was kind of parked on guitar, and I stayed on guitar for forever. And I love guitar. Don't get me wrong, it's awesome. But I also love piano and keyboards and stuff. So I wanted to start this one out just really with nothing else on my mind except to come up with some cool sounding jams, you know, just between drums and piano to start. And of course, I wrote some of it on guitar and drums, but that was the initial focus, you know, and that's all fine and good. And then eventually it starts to turn into songs at some point, but that was the initial impetus of it.
Now, I'm hearing some Queen. I'm a big Queen fan. Are you a Queen fan?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. Okay, so I'm picking up on the right kind of vibes. Yeah, and you made a great point. A couple great points is, right, I think every song has piano in it. A lot of it actually will start with the piano, and then the rest of the instruments kind of hop along in there. And, you know, I think a lot of people now, like, you know, you play with Count 77, you do keyboards in that band. But for us who knew you from the Britney Fox days, I didn't know you played keyboards and piano to this level. So it's pretty impressive.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, it was something I've been wanting to do for a long time, but I was required to be on guitar. So that's where I went, you know.
Let's talk about a little bit like what the themes are on this album, because it kind of feels like it could be a concept that runs throughout it, or maybe it's just individual pieces that go together. Is there any kind of theme that runs throughout it?
Well, there's all the lyrics mean something to me, mm-hmm. and I get people coming back saying different songs have touched them, you know, with the lyrics and stuff. It was sequenced in a way, Mike, that is supposed to be in this order, particularly so that and it's hard for anybody to do this these days because of, you know, how everyone's attention span is quite different than it used to be. But in the days of vinyl records, though, they were a lot of energy and care went into the sequence, like which order the songs were in. So, and this one's like that. A lot of people will just hear a song or two off of it and whatever, listen that way. But it was meant to be heard from the beginning to the end, and maybe not so much a concept album as it is just those songs and hit you in that order. By the time it ends with the very last song, it's exactly the order I wanted people to hear it in, you know, whether they do or not listen to it all at once like that.
Now, right now, you don't have it on any kind of streaming services. Is it going to stay that way? Or, like, even, like, I don't think you've got, like, a lyric video or anything like that. Are you just, are you going to go completely old school with this? Or are you going to try some of the things that, you know, are kind of in vogue at this point?
I did, my last album I did was all on all the streaming, and that was cool. Right now, it's going to be just on CD. You can get the lyrics on the website for free there. You just download them. It's going to just stay on CD for a while. This is a limited edition run right now, so... When these are all gone and I reprint, then I'm talking about doing some streaming stuff then. My last album's all over that stuff. But, yeah, I'm just waiting for a little while, just sorting out some different options when it gets to that. But right now I'm happy just to have it available on CD.
I know for me this was a real treat because I like really catchy, memorable songs. And I don't want to point fingers at anybody that's still making music today, but I sometimes feel like some of the bands, especially bands that maybe existed in the 80s and 90s, that they put stuff out. I don't know. I don't know if it's their best. I don't know if it's very memorable, but I feel like with this album, there were so many songs that would be stuck in my head. Wicked catchy. You could sing along to them. And I miss that. Like, I don't feel like I get that all the time from stuff of today. And I hate to say I'm a little bit kind of stuck. I don't necessarily gravitate to the modern music that's out there today, but I was definitely getting like the feeling, especially having an actual physical CD, listening to it every day, you know, jamming on it in the car. I don't know, it really kind of brought me back to like the old school way of doing things.
Yeah, that's still my favorite. You know, I love a lot of the technology, Mike, that's happened over the years, especially being somebody who records music. You know, I mean, it's night and day. We started, geez, way back when we were recording live to a cassette tape. So it's like, you know, and then everything was on actual tape in the studio for years and years and years. And, you know, so there are some things about this new period of technology I do like. What I don't care for quite as much is I like the days of vinyl, and I like the days of sequencing the songs,
yep.
Even though there were still singles back then. And I like whether it's heavy or not, I like melodic songs the most, and that's in any style at all. So even if something's brand new, I don't necessarily buy a lot of new music, but when I hear something that's melodic, I will like it. I think from about 2000 up to today, the songwriting changed so much to me. I can still look back to the 90s and really enjoy a lot of stuff that was made in the 90s.
Yep.
But that seemed like that was the end of the, what would you call it, the standard songwriting style where, you know, you remember the chorus, and the song is structured in a way that the listener is easily turned on by it. They can follow it easily, and it's memorable, and it's, you know what I mean? So like from 2000 to today, less and less music seems to follow that. They follow some other style of songwriting. I'm not sure what it is, you know?
Yeah. So you talked about people telling you what songs really hit home with them. So maybe I'll tell you some of the ones that I really like, and maybe you can give your thoughts on some of these tracks. Obviously, the first song on it, Are You Right, that to me sounds like that's the closest, you know, that I really feel like it's that, you know, classic Tommy Paris sound that you're known for, but now you're integrating some of these other elements. It's kind of giving everybody a taste for it. And obviously the second track, Only Love Can Do That to You, dude, that is like that song's very, very, very catchy, and it gets stuck in my head constantly. And, you know, and it's kind of got that fast, you know, piano jam, almost reminds me of like Don't Stop Me Now a little bit, you know. And just right off the bat, those two really caught my ears, eyes, everything.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah, I really like the whole album, and which is rare for me to say, Mike, because, you know, there's always stuff that you finish and then as time goes by you don't really like stuff on an album. I really still like this whole album, and those two songs in particular, of course, I really like. I'm glad you like those.
Yeah, and there's more, Talking With Your Head Down. That's super cool. That kind of has that 70s glammy, sweet type of a vibe. That's a super cool song, man.
Right on. Thanks, man. Yeah, that one's fun. That one, I had that one for some time, and I wrote it on guitar, actually, and I was just, it changed keys. I can't tell you, like 16 million times, and it just kept moving it around in different keys. It wasn't sounding right, and it was sounding like some other tunes. And I was like, so I finally one day it came to me, like the key and it changing the chord structure around, so it was like trying to move into some other area. Then at first it was just kind of following some old tropey songwriting, and then eventually it kind of just morphed into what it is now, and I finally found a key to park it in. And yeah, I love that song. It's just really a lot of fun.
Love Me to the Last Day. It's got that real big, you know, power chord chorus, you know. Do, 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 do. I mean, that's a killer one too.
Right on. Yeah, that's it's still a lot of, some of it's, you know, like to me it's a departure a little bit, and then somebody else may hear and go, oh, it just sounds like the same stuff, you know, whatever. It's from everybody's perspective. But yeah, to me it's moved on just enough for me to still dig it, where it's interesting and fun for me to do, without losing a lot of the things, of course, that I like about, you know, rock and hard rock.
I also really like Neverwall. I'm a big Kiss fan, and I don't know if you like Kiss or not, but like I feel like I could feel like the verses kind of remind me, it could be like a Paul Stanley solo album, 19, you know, it's giving me that 70s Paul Stanley vibe. And I got to ask you, what is the Neverwall, man? What is that song about?
What is Neverwall about?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I normally like when people tell me what stuff's about.
I don't know.
Yeah. Have you read the lyrics to that one yet?
No, I haven't read the lyrics. Just been listening to it. And okay, so you say don't make the call to the Neverwall. So I don't know, man. It almost feels like Neverwall would be like, you know, something you can't get past. And maybe you don't, I don't know, you don't want to go there. You don't want to have that kind of mindset of never. I don't know. Maybe that's what I'm taking out of it.
No, you're pretty close to what I had in mind. Yeah,
okay.
It's a lot of it's, if you listen to the verse, you read the lyrics of the verse, it's essentially kind of about, you know, it not sitting on the sidelines and jumping in and being the one who's critiqued and the one who's analyze and stuff, as opposed to the opposite, where you're on the sidelines and you critique whatever field it is, where you know, it's like different. Once you put yourself out there for whatever that happens to be, it could be anything. You stand on your own two feet. You say, okay, let the critiquing begin.
Right.
And the opposite is doing the critiquing, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's great.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like the dichotomy of both, being in both of those positions, you know, on the one on the sidelines and one in the field, and the kind of the correlation between both of them living together. So if that makes any sense, if you read the lyrics, maybe you'll get that, maybe you won't, but that's kind of where that one came from, what that one's about.
Nice, man. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When it comes to like playing piano and keyboards, like you do in Count 77, is it weird to this day for you to be kind of more in the back? Because like so many of us know you as a guy of being out in the front. I mean, are you cool with being in the background?
Oh, absolutely. It's I'm a member of the group. I sing on everything. It's to me the whole thing is if the whole thing comes off or not.
Uh-huh.
And I'm one guy of six, and so if it comes off, then I'm happy. You know, that's really the main thing for me. Whether, you know, whether I'm out front or on the side or wherever I'm at, I like to do the best I can to hold up my end of the deal and have the whole thing go over. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. So yeah, no, I have no problem at all.
Now, when you go back to your last album, so this, like we said, this new album has definitely got some different elements, bit of a departure, but not so far off that somebody, you know, couldn't comprehend what was going on. When you did the Tommy Paris Band album, that one was definitely more straightforward. Is that something you wanted to get out there at that point?
Absolutely, yeah. The idea behind that was actually to put that out and play half of that album, and then the other half Brittany Fox stuff. So it's kind of designed to go along with that, so that the live band would be able to sort of mesh with the older Brittany tunes more. So yeah, that was by design. It was kind of just, you know, designed to be exactly what it is. Mostly, you know, most all of it was designed to go along with those other tunes, you know.
Yeah, because it does almost feel like it could be the the follow-up, the true follow-up to Bite Down Hard.
I've heard a few people say that, and I take that as a great compliment. Yeah, I don't. It just happened to be. It just happened to be what was in me at the time, and you know, I was trying to mix those together to you know, just have a mix of that. So, because the idea was always to move on. You know, like Bite Down Hard's cool, but then to be playing that same material for 30 years, it's like after a while, it's like you want to draw some music from other albums and stuff. So
yeah,
that one was designed to go along with the old tunes a lot.
Now, as you know, I run a Twitter site that's all about 80s metal and everything. And when Bite Down Hard comes up, man, a lot of people think it's the best Britney Fox album. I mean, that's got to make you feel good when you see those kind of comments out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's nice to hear. And you know, it's like, and then some people, it's like, you know, not the real Britney Fox.
Right,
and
right.
So I get both, you know, which is fine. Like I said, it's, I love hearing that people say that Bite Down Hard is the best Britney album. That's pretty cool to hear. Absolutely, yeah.
When I listen to that album and I listen to the stuff you do today, I mean, I can hear like what your style is and how it comes through. When I look at the songwriting credits, I think a lot of it says you and Billy Childs, and it says you and Michael Kelly Smith, maybe some of it. But were you really the main writer? Because those guys didn't write anything on those other two albums. Were you pretty much driving the ship when it came to writing?
No, as a matter of fact, those were, when I wrote with Billy and Michael, those were 50-50 efforts for sure.
Oh, no kidding. Okay,
so
cool.
Without boring you, Mike, the process would be, for example, Billy would give me a cassette, say, with like the kind of skeleton of five tunes that he had written the music to. And it would have guitars and a drum machine and bass on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd give me those, and I'd take them away and write lyrics and come up with melodies for those. And Michael did the same. So music was almost complete. Nearly complete, and then I did like I just called the other half, you know, the lyrics and the melodies, and would bring in, would sing on them, and then make a mix of that, and then send it back to them, and we would do that for a long time, and all the stuff from Bite Down Hard happened that way with me writing over their existing music that they gave me.
Oh, okay, so that must have been kind of liberating for them to do this album and get more involved, because when you look at the songwriting credits of the first two albums, they all say Dean Davidson. I don't think any of the other guys' names are mentioned. Once again, we all know that people put in their little own stylings, but he pretty much had all the songwriting credits on those first two.
Yeah, I think Michael is credited on like co-writing Dream On or one of them. I'm not sure which one it was, but yeah, he was mainly doing all of it. It's just interesting. It's like, songs come out different ways, and I've written them a lot of different, you know, written by myself, written with other people, and you know, it's like this last project was so long and so laborious, Mike. It's like thinking about writing lyrics and melodies only is like a walk in the park. I say, oh my God, that would be so easy.
I know.
Yes, but, you know, but.
And we forgot to mention, too, is that, like, you played all of it. Like, you played the drums, the guitar. I mean, you did drum program. Is it drum programming on the album?
No, that's all real drums.
That's all real drums. Okay, so you did the drums, the bass, the guitar, the writing. I mean, that's a mammoth project, man. So kudos to you.
Thanks, man. It was massive. It was I'm so happy I did it. Definitely. Absolutely. I think if it weren't for like the pandemic jacking everybody up,
right,
it wouldn't have been quite as long, but that definitely like put a break in the project, so that, you know, it would have been long anyway, probably.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, but not that long.
What songs do you like the most when you go back to Bite Down Hard? I know, like, I'm a big fan of Closer to Your Love and Look My Way. I think those are super, you know, once again, that's that melodic stuff. I like that a lot. Are there certain songs on there that you just love to this day? Which ones do you gravitate to?
Well, if somebody's like, if I'm going to have somebody, they're going to listen to that album and they've never heard it, and I'm just going to pick one song for them.
Mm-hmm.
Just like sum it all up, if they're only going to listen to one, I always pick Closer to Your Love. That's my favorite song on that album.
Nice. All right, cool.
Yeah, that's my favorite. I like a lot of it, for sure. I like Lonely Too Long and Six Guns Loaded.
Yeah.
But Yeah, Closer to Your Love is my favorite from that album.
Before Brittany Fox, so there was Jilson, and this was a band. And once again, when you listen to that, I mean, you shine right through. You can hear your style on there. You were shopping for a deal before Brittany Fox. Did you get close to getting a record deal when you were in Jilson?
We were still shopping, but we were talking to Shrapnel Records.
Okay.
Do you know Mike Varney, who owns Shrapnel Records?
Yes.
Yeah, we were talking. That's when I first met Mike, and then that was forever ago. But we never signed with him. And before, you know, during the period where we were shopping, a friend of mine, she gave me a trade magazine and said, check this out. And she opened it to an ad that said, you know, Brittany Fox is looking for a new singer. She goes, you should check it out. And I took the magazine home, and it was a trade magazine. It's all kind of like the insider business type of publication. Anyways, I took it home, set it down, didn't think much more. And then as time went on, I was like, another week went by, and I looked at it again. I started checking it out, and I started seeing what I could do about it. We were getting there, but who knows if we would have, gotten signed or not. I'm not sure that we would have.
Right.
But it was going well. We were getting to getting labels out to see showcases and all that, you know. But
well, you ended up on Atlantic Records with Brittany, so that's even better than Shrapnel.
Yeah, well, that worked out good. You know, that worked out good. We actually it's a trip because after that Sony put out an album called Extended Versions. And then we had a song on this Nintendo compilation album that had Roy Orbison and Sheena Easton and stuff on it.
I remember that was
on MC. Have you heard that? Turn On from that album?
Yes. Yep. I remember that.
Yeah, and that was on MCA. And then we got that deal with Spitfire, which is Eagle Rock. We did Springhead Motor Shark. So, yeah, it's been way cool, you know. There was a period between the band, because the band was on Columbia when I joined, and then the band was dropped by Columbia and then picked up by Atlantic. But so there was a period in between there where we were without a house. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a lot of people down to where we were writing music and stuff, which was in Seattle City in Jersey. Yeah, and managed to get a deal on Atlantic, so that was cool.
Was there a group of people at Atlantic that still believed kind of in, you know, like hard rock, heavy metal? Because I look at this album comes out in 91, and I want to say they signed TNT pretty late, and in 92 they did Realize Fantasy. So it seemed like Atlantic was still believed in this kind of music. Was there some people there that did that, or what was the story over there?
Well, check this out. It was a branch of Atlantic, a sub-label called East West. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, East West, yep.
Okay, so the president was Sylvia Roan, and her band that she was all in for was En Vogue. Do you remember En Vogue?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I remember having a meeting with her, with our manager and the band, and about, you know, the campaign to promote the album and all that. And in retrospect, I realized, you know, she definitely, you know, she was a president of that label, so I mean, she definitely had favor for En Vogue because that was her baby, you know. And so I think things were, besides the other stuff in the rock world that was changing, I think label wise they were starting down a different road, you know. So it was definitely like the being the last guy asked to the party, you know.
So basically there wasn't a big rock presence over there, and it was kind of fading out as the 90s began then.
Yeah, I mean, the turnover in stat, you know, A&R people and people who work at the labels was amazing. It's like every time you turned around there was a new person in place of the person that you were just talking to a couple months ago. So it's quite a fluid business.
I was scrolling through Facebook the other day, and I think I saw that Billy has a version of Brittany Fox that he's got out there, and he's got the Brittany Fox name out there. Do you even care? I mean, are you pretty much done with Brittany Fox and just want to do your own thing?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's cool if he wants to do that. I have no problem with that. That's, for me personally, it's like I'll play some stuff with my solo band, you know, from that time.
Yep.
For sure, and enjoy it though, Mike, and definitely enjoy it. But to play that music exclusively, I just can't do it anymore. It's not fun for me, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you made a good point, like you said earlier. I mean, you can look back at that album and say, oh, that was a great time, and we did that. But you know, like I said, over 30 years later, you know, things change, you want to try different things. And I'm telling you, everybody's got to check out what you're doing now, because they'll still get that vibe that they love from back in the day, but they're going to get some different elements in there too, man. So I really, once again, I can't recommend enough to people to check this out.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's only available on the website, so you can go there and it will take you to where you can buy it. And the lyrics, you can download them there for free on there. But yeah, everybody check it out for sure.
So what's next for you? What's on the agenda? Are you going to get a band together and play some of this stuff live? What do you want to do next?
Yeah, that's the goal. We're doing a bunch of 77 gigs starting up in August, and so we'll be doing those. And we're recording some new stuff. I just did some vocals yesterday in the studio with them. So I'll be doing live dates with them. And then when 77 isn't playing, yeah, I'd like to get my band out, my solo band, and play most all of Earth Ears. And then some stuff from older albums and, you know, some stuff from even way back when. And have a good mix of stuff, you know, but mainly focus on the new album, perfect. Earth Ears.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, once again, thanks for your time. Glad we got to connect, and just keep rocking, man. Keep making music like this, because music has to continue. It can't just, you know, be from the 80s and never progress. It's got to continue.
Got to keep at it, man. What else am I going to do, Mike?
I don't know, man. You've been doing this stuff a long time. I can't imagine you want to make a drastic career change.
Yeah, no, not at this point. I'm all in now. It's too late.
All right, brother. Thank you so much, man. Have a good night.
All right. Take care, Mike.
Well, that was great talking with Tommy. Make sure you go to TommyParis.com and buy the new solo album, Earth Ears. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Rock on!